evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 1st, 2018. Human Rights Watch is embracing yesterday's UN Security Council decision to wait a month on South Sudan sanctions.
The council hasn't really named anybody to their sanctions since 2015, and so there's been a lot of concern that this talk of sanctions is an empty threat. And it remains to be seen, you know, what they're going to do in the coming month. But what we know is that they're going to be watching this very closely.
But an Enough Project analyst doesn't see it that way.
This is a very diplomatic agreement among the members of the council to decide to kick the can down the road, in essence, to delay the decision-making on the crucial issue of enacting consequences on the peace spoilers in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A UN Security Council resolution to extend sanctions on South Sudan has been renewed for 45 more days after the council passed the U.S.-authored document in New York on Thursday. The resolution passed with the required 9 yes votes and 6 abstentions from the 15-member council. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley reiterated her frustration with the country's leaders.
The United States has lost its patience. The status quo is unacceptable. It is long past time for all of us to demand better for the South Sudanese people.
The Security Council delayed a decision for 1 month to impose travel bans and asset freezes on 6 top South Sudanese leaders accused of impeding the peace. Over the next month, the warring parties must stop fighting and sign a peace deal. During that time, the council will also review reported violations of the cessation of hostilities agreement by both sides. The resolution calls on Secretary General Antonio Guterres to report back to the council on June 30th. Akshaya Kumar, the Deputy UN Director for Human Rights Watch, says the delay could be interpreted as an empty threat, but she believes it acts as a warning to commanders responsible for abuses.
It's obviously a really important moment. The council hasn't really named anybody to their sanctions since 2015. And so there's been a lot of concern that this talk of sanctions is an empty threat. And it remains to be seen, you know, what they're going to do in the coming month. But what we know is that they're going to be watching this very closely.
South Sudan's representative, Ambassador Akwe Bona Malwal, said his government will work towards peace, but added the proposal to impose additional sanctions on 6 individuals is not necessary.
The annex that is attached to this resolution is unfortunate. It's not helpful. The danger is that it might not give the desire that is hoped by those who have supported this resolution.
Ambassador Takeda Alemu of Ethiopia, who abstained from voting along with Russia and China, urged council members to drop the threat of additional sanctions so the Intergovernmental Authority on Development can move forward with its efforts to revitalize the peace agreement.
A divided council on this issue will not be helpful to the peace process, and it will not send the right message to the parties.
Kumar says the delay keeps the Security Council well positioned to move decisively and keep adding individuals to their list if they find reason. She says it also suggests the council is watching and they are ready and willing to consider further action in early July. A Reuters report this week accused ceasefire monitors of failing to release at least 14 ceasefire violation reports that document how the South Sudan Army targeted civilians and, quote, burned children alive and gang-raped women, end quote. The report also accuses the rebels of using child soldiers. The Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring Mechanism, or CITESAM, is also expected to brief the council on violations of the cessation of hostilities in the coming weeks. Kumar welcomes the move.
We know the UN is going to work with CITESAM, collect evidence whenever there's a violation of the cessation of hostilities. That includes keeping child soldiers in the forces under recruitment. That includes continuing fighting, war crimes, all of that. And they're going to be reporting back within 1 month. So that's quite strong. It shows that the eyes of the world are on South Sudan right now.
Kumar says by reviewing CITESAM's reports, the Security Council has set the stage for more transparency in the collection of evidence. Brian Adeba, Deputy Director for Policy at the Enough Project, says the move by the UN Security Council will encourage peace spoilers in South Sudan to continue blocking the road to peace.
This is a very diplomatic agreement among the members of the council to decide to kick the can down the road, in essence to delay the decision-making on the crucial issue of enacting consequences on the peace spoilers in South Sudan. So that was really what it was all about.
What did the Enough Project expect the UN Security Council to do? Were you expecting any specific action geared towards the peace spoilers in South Sudan?
When you look at the Security Council, the African Union and IGAD, what they have done in the last 5 years is issue threats without following through on their threats. So the issue of not following through on the threats has emboldened the peace spoilers in the South Sudanese conflict. They've become intransigent because they know they can get away with it. There are no consequences for violating the cessation of hostilities agreement. There are no consequences for abrogating the peace agreement. So they know they can get away with it, and they're more than happy to listen to these threats. So the international community, what it really needs to do is move beyond the threats. And if you look at what has happened in September 2016, we counted 66 times the number of times that the UN Security Council has uttered threats against the spoilers in South Sudan. From 2013 to December 2017, we counted almost 20 times that the African Union and IGAD have issued threats. So how many threats do we need to get the point across? This is just too much. And in the meantime, the people of South Sudan are suffering. This has to stop.
Brian, looking at the situation in South Sudan, it's a complex situation. Some of the recommendations of Enough Project are vigorous. For instance, you have been recommending asset freeze. Some of the assets of these leaders are hidden in banks, and you will need time to trace them. Don't you think the move by the UN Security Council to give the leaders time is an appropriate option?
Look, if the UN Security Council puts it in their perspective that they want to find hidden assets, I think they could do it at the snap of their fingers. The issue here is that the Security Council itself is so divided and therefore doesn't have the will to actually look for those hidden assets. It's not difficult to find those assets if they are there, and I presume they are there. It's not difficult to find those assets. It's not a question of, you know, establishing where these assets are. It's the question of, is the political will present or not? And at this moment, it appears it's not there.
That's Brian Adeba, Deputy Director for Policy at the Enough Project, speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Washington yesterday. South Sudanese reaction to the UN Security Council vote to extend the sanctions regime for 45 more days is mixed. While some Juba residents welcome the sanctions, some lawmakers say they fear the move will delay the peace process even more.
Juba resident who prefers to remain anonymous for security reasons says the UN Security Council made the right decision because extending the sanctions will force the country's leaders to bring peace to the country.
Few people cannot really make the whole country to suffer because of their selfish interests. So as a citizen of this country, I really congratulate the international community, especially America, for the bold decision that they have taken against the spoilers of peace and those who are seen obstructing peace in South Sudan.
He says South Sudanese leaders must put the interests of the people above their own for a change. Joyce Dushman, the leader of South Sudan Women Parliamentary Caucus, also welcomes the decision.
All the time they've been saying the same thing, but the war is continuing. These people are going there to add these people. I don't know exactly what these people are doing. And we as women, we are tired of these people. Because if they could put really a serious mandate for whatever people are going to discuss, at this time peace have come.
But Susan Wasuk, a member of South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly, says the sanctions may negatively impact the peace process.
The sanction itself is not helpful because the individuals who are sanctioned at the moment, these are the people who are negotiating the peace agreement from right time in 2014 when the war broke out here in South Sudan, and they were negotiating until today. And I'm sure if the sanction, it means that they will not be able to continue with the peace negotiation in Addis Ababa.
Jame David Kolok, the executive director of the Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, believes sanctions are not the best solution to the South Sudanese conflict.
While that is one of the options, I think the option of IGAD, in which is trying to persuade these parties to get around the table and agree on some of the proposals that are being put forward is very important, and that should be given priority. And if it fails, then other options can easily come in.
David says IGAD should give South Sudanese leaders one more chance to resolve their difference at the negotiating table. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Civil society activists in South Sudan welcome the IGAD Council of Ministers call for direct talks between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar within the next month. In its Thursday statement, the ministers also agreed to consider effective participation of Machar in the peace process. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
Rech Malual, executive director of Screen of Rights, a local rights group working to end gender-based violence, embraces the IGAD communique.
It has really touched one of the grounds for peace to come. One of the grounds is for President Kiir and his former vice president to meet and discuss. Because when the problem occurred or the conflict happened in South Sudan, it was a two-man thing. And it is these two men, if they sit, they can bring a meaningful peace. We can talk of excluding them, but then if they are the one who started the fighting because of certain issues between them, it will for sure be them to sit again and try to sort out all these issues between them.
And Malual is advising IGAD mediators to allow the warring parties plenty of time to discuss the contentious issues during the next round of talks. During yesterday's IGAD Council of Ministers meeting, participants said they will endorse a revised proposed bridging agreement on governance and security issues, which have been the main stumbling blocks to signing a new peace deal. The ministers authorized another round of what they call intensive interlinked consultation between the warring parties to identify possible compromises and to build the consensus. They call on IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, to report on the outcome of the meeting to the council. Legal rights activist Robert Badri says he too welcomes the IGAD communique, but does not believe mediators should allow delegates from the warring parties more time to talk.
Having, the second round of consultation, I think that would not be necessary because parties have already met and they have ample time to discuss issues. They have already set out their reservation concerning various issues of the agreement, and they have had time to reflect over these issues. So what would have been vital is just to bring parties together and see the possibility of them either agreeing or giving their positions, not more and more and more consultations.
The IGAD ministers also agreed to consider instituting punitive measures against the violators of the cessation of hostilities agreement. They requested IGAD Assembly to delegate the Council of Ministers to decide on actions to be taken against the violators. South Sudan in Focus contacted various South Sudanese government officials regarding for comment on the IGAD communique. Information Minister Michael Makwey and Acting Foreign Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro were unreachable and were said to be in Addis Ababa. Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Maiwen McCall Arik referred this program to Chief Negotiator Nyel Deng Nyel, but he too was out of the office today. Speaking about the latest round of the IGAD-led high-level revitalization forum, which ended without an agreement, Makwe recently said the Kiir administration will not sign any peace deal that allows Machar to be part of a future transitional government.
We cannot give out the position of first vice president again, give it back to Riek Machar, because we have learned the hard way from Riek Machar.
General Oyet Nathaniel, the SPLM-IO governor-designate for Imatong State and head of his party's delegation to the high-level revitalization forum on governance, had these observations about the government's negotiating team.
They have a lot of difficulties. They are indecisive. They don't give a concession at the top because they are not fully empowered by President Salva Kiir. Nyal Deng Nyal and Makui have always been avoiding taking responsibility on major decisions. So we feel that if Salva Kiir will be involved directly with Riek Machar, that one will break the ice.
Nathaniel faulted the IGAD Council of Ministers for failing to pass a resolution that calls for the immediate release of Machar from house arrest in South Africa. The government of South Africa has not admitted to holding Machar under house arrest, but rebel spokesmen have said in the past that the rebel leader is not free to leave the country and is being held at the request of the Kiir administration. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Flooding is out of control in parts of South Sudan. Find out where exactly when we return.
Think. People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you a good friend?
I'm kind. I think I'm a down-to-earth person. I treat people the way they are. As in, I take you, the way you've come to me is the way I handle you.
That you are honest in all times to the other person you call your friend makes you a good friend to me.
What makes me a good friend is the ability to keep what my friends tell me, some of the confidential things they share with me.
I'm a man who makes a lot of jokes. I simplify everything. I give myself to people in the first place so that they can also allow me be their friend. I'm always accessible.
I laugh a lot. And laughing a lot is one of the most things that people really like about me being as their friend.
I would say what makes me a good friend is the way I support and protect my friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Officials in South Sudan's Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management say at least 30,000 people have been affected by flash floods due to heavy rains in the greater Upper Nile region. The South Sudan Meteorological Department warns more areas in the greater Barkazal and Equatoria regions will face flash floods during this rainy season. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Getwich Peter Kulang is the Undersecretary at South Sudan's Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management. Kulang held a news conference in Juba today to warn citizens about flash floods that have already affected parts of the country and are expected to hit other places soon.
We have already started receiving heavy rains in some part of the country, which is good news to our farmers and livestock keepers in some parts. But it is not good news for residents from other flood fronts areas, particularly in Greater Jonglei, including Bor and Pibor.
Last month, experts from the IGAD countries met in Djibouti to talk about preparedness to mitigate climate-related impacts. The meeting concluded that the IGAD region, including South Sudan and Kenya, will experience above-normal rainfall from June to September this year. Kulang says his ministry has received reports from Bor and Pibor that heavy rains have destroyed roads and livelihoods and have affected tens of thousands of South Sudanese citizens.
In Bor, we have about 9 locations. High Mashor, High Fanjak, Najils, Malo, Achindid, Block 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, Muldur, Pakua, and Dr. John, Garang University and Palit are affected so far with the current rain situation.
Kulang is urging government and aid agencies and individuals to donate 80 million South Sudanese pounds to provide emergency relief supplies, including tents, blankets, and drainage tools for flood victims.
Soon there will be a call from different locations. That is why we are requesting some cash. We are confident whatever is available, the government is proud of to help his own people. And then our friends and partners will come in.
Kulang says the funds will also be used to create a rescue plan to save people residing in low-lying areas. Mojok Modo, Director General of South Sudan Meteorological Services, says the long-range weather forecast shows heavy rains that will likely cause flooding in other areas, including Greater Bahr Ghazal, Eastern Equatoria, and parts of Central and Western Equatoria.
There is likelihood of rainfall implication that may cause more flooding to continue in the same areas that were affected, in addition to some low-lying areas along the River Nile and the Sobat tributaries. Communities residing in flood-prone areas are advised to take measures and move to high grounds to avoid damage and losses of lives and properties.
Modo also advises farmers to take advantage of the heavy rains to increase their crop production while avoiding planting their seeds in flood-prone areas. Lieutenant Colonel Bit Abraham is the Assistant Commissioner for Fire Safety and Disaster Management at South Sudan's National Civil Defense Service. He says his office is coordinating with different units in flood-front areas to help save civilians in case of flooding.
We directed all our forces in all states, especially in the areas that are affected to have the high risk of flooding. We directed them to evacuate communities who are living near the River Nile and to make waterways for the communities. And we advised them also to educate the communities not to swim in that floating waters, not to drink that waters, not to allow the animals to drink that waters.
Abraham warns citizens that flood waters, especially in former Unity State, may be contaminated by oil spills in the area. He says his teams do not have boats or other emergency supplies needed to evacuate citizens from low-lying areas in case of flash floods hitting the area. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
The World Health Organization has expanded its Ebola vaccination campaign in the Democratic Republic of Congo to include high-risk people in 3 areas. Latest WHO figures show 37 confirmed cases and 13 probable ones. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Since the start of the Ebola vaccination campaign in May, the World Health Organization says 682 people have been vaccinated. Among them, nearly 500 in Imbandaka, a city of more than 1 million people. The campaign recently was expanded to include Bikoro, where Ebola was first discovered on May 8th, and the Iboko Health Zone, which is the most remote of the 3 areas. Those immunized include health workers, responders, and other people at high risk of falling ill from the fatal disease. WHO officials say the vaccine, which has not been formally approved, appears to be providing protection and giving rise to hope that it can help stop the spread of the Ebola virus. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who was president of Liberia during the unprecedented Ebola epidemic in West Africa, shares that hope. Ebola broke out in West Africa in late 2013. By the time it was brought under control in 2016, the disease had killed more than 11,000 people in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. Liberia lost 4,800 people during that outbreak. While on a visit to Geneva earlier this week, she told VOA there has been an improvement in healthcare delivery systems, including infection control, since the experience with Ebola.
And so the capacity to be able to address any outbreak is now improved in the affected countries as well as in other places. I think there's an important new dimension in the fight for Ebola, and that is vaccines.
Sirleaf says vaccine trials in Guinea and now in the DRC have shown good results.
We're hoping that DRC, like others, will have a capacity to deal with it, to stop the spread. We're hoping that DRC will come out of this, you know, without the major effect, the major results that we saw in the three countries that were not prepared for this.
The vaccine developer Merck has contributed 7,500 doses of the Ebola vaccine to the DRC. The company says as many as 300,000 more doses are available in case of a serious outbreak. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda is imposing a tax on social media use that critics claim is an effort to smother dissent and hinder political organizing while hitting the poor the hardest. The government denies the allegations and says the money is badly needed to bolster funding for education, healthcare, and roads while curtailing gossip. The tax was passed yesterday and will take effect July 1st on services such as Facebook, Twitter, and WhatsApp. While the cost doesn't sound like much, 200 shillings, which is about 5 U.S. cents, it adds up to about $19 a year in a country with the average per capita income of about $615. In addition, a 1% tax is being imposed on mobile money transactions, which are widely used for remittances. There are questions about how the tax can be implemented, given that the government is straining just to make sure all SIM cards are registered. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Soweto Baby by DJ Mafarisa featuring Wizkid and DJ Bucks. We've been listening to DJ Mafarisa featuring Wizkid and DJ Bucks with the song Soweto Baby. I'm Ayandeng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Tell us what you think about the show. You can weigh in by finding us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reaching us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Have a safe and happy weekend. And join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Get your body, get us fire.